Well, I try and start at the beginning and then bring you right up to date with my present activities, making pop records for the commercial market. I was about 5 years old when I first wanted a gramophone, and it was one of those toy gramophones with a celluloid sound box and a key to wind it up. And I remember I'd seen it in the shop window and I'd asked for it for Christmas. And as quite often happens, my wish came true and I got this gramophone for Christmas with some children's records. Well, I used to play this all the time, and it was quite obvious to my parents that this fascinated me. And when I was 7 years old, they bought me a proper gramophone. The portable type that used to be very popular, about, 20 years ago. And at this time, I used to be fascinated with making things out of shoeboxes, like puppet shows and slot machines and all sorts of things. And I used to try and experiment with my gramophone, and I discovered if you play the record at the end, on the run-out groove, you could shout down the sound chamber and the sound would be imprinted in the grooves. And I thought that I'd discovered something marvellous. And of course, I was really doing just what Edison had discovered years before. But anyway, this became not only a hobby, but it used to take up most of my time. I used to go around old record shops in Gloucester and old sales room and buy up lots of gramophone records, a lot of which I still have at home in my attic. I'll tell you more about that later. Anyway, this went on until I was about 13 years old and discovered that it had changed over to, I wanted a magnetic pickup, which I connected to the gramophone. And then I discovered that I wanted to amplify this. And I made my first one-valve radio. And then, of course, my first one-valve amplifier. And by the time I was about 14, I'd sold my treasured possession, a cine camera, and had bought my first amplifier, £7.10, I remember. And the war was on at this time, and I used to play records for dancing too, mainly Vic Sylvester and different things, different records that were very popular then. And I think this is when I began to get an ear for the type of music the public liked, something with a good, solid rhythm and with a tune forced home. And I also naturally began to collect a lot of radio gear, and I soon found that my entertaining with gramophone records became very popular around Gloucestershire, and I was in pretty big demand. At one time, to such an extent that I used to have to employ some other friends of mine to operate gear. Say on an August bank holiday, they would be at Huntley, I'd be in Gloucester, and somebody else would be at Newington. And by this time I was about 16, I used to provide music for amateur dramatic societies. I remember plays like The Ghost Train and The Poltergeist, and lots of plays, and I used to go out of my way to provide the right sort of music for them and the right sound effects. My father was an estate agent and naturally wanted me to be the same, but my head was always in radio books and audio books, and so they used to let me work in a radio shop in my spare time. And then I went in the forces when I was 18 and became a radar mechanic, and my 2 years in the RAF was taken up by learning as much as possible about radar. And also, I was pretty handy around the camp at repairing radios and record players. When I came out, in the meantime, my father had died, I decided that I must take the plunge and move to London and take a job connected with recording, because during my time in the services I'd experimented with wire recorders and disc cutting, and this really fascinated me more than anything else. And so I came to London and took a job for 1 week in a film dubbing room, which I must say I disliked because there was nothing creative in it. And I left this to take a job in Stone's radio shop in Edgware Road. And I kept this job for 2 months. Then I saw the International Broadcasting Corporation were advertising for an engineer, a TV engineer. So I went along and I discovered it was operating a closed-circuit television setup. This was before commercial TV had started. And I took the job. After about a couple of weeks, I was invited to go on one of the Luxembourg shows, People Are Funny, which was then, the chief engineer was Tig Rowe, who's now at Associated Rediffusion, Fusion, I believe. And after a couple of weeks, I was put in charge of the show itself. Of course, this is a great honor for me, and I really did work extremely hard to keep the standard of recording up, which at times is extremely difficult. And by the way, this is when I first met Mr. Orders, who'd come along to a show at Torquay to take some particulars. And I remember we had a long, long discussion about the different gear we were using. Well, at the same time, when I arrived back in London in a week, I was put on some pop recording sessions. The first one, I believe, was for Pi. It was Ted Hockridge record. And about my third recording became a hit. It was by Frankie Vaughan. It was called Green Door. After that, Philips used to use me almost entirely, and also Pi. And I built up quite a reputation of being able to record pop records. This, coupled with my weekend activities with the show, just to keep me terribly busy, and it got to the stage where I began to feel that I'd reached about as far as I could get at IBC. And one day, Dennis Preston suggested, would I like to work with him? Well, Dennis Preston is an independent disc producer and handles artists like Ackerville, Chris Barber, Mike Preston. And after a little bit of thought, I decided to take the job with him. And he had a small office then in Denmark Street. I found a small room in Newman Street and bought an old Magnaphon editing machine. And I spent most of my time editing the recordings we'd made at IBC. They were Lonnie Donegan hits and Johnny Duncan, and well, quite a stream really. I recorded Petit Fleur and Val Penny Blues, all the Donegan hits. And the list of actual hits I've recorded reaches about 40. This is in the last 4 years.